You're listening to a podcast from 702.
But right now, I want us to get an update on the UIF. A month ago, the Labour Minister announced the suspension of Unemployment Insurance Fund Commissioner Tebogo Maruping and the entire management due to allegations of fraud and mismanagement of COVID-19 relief funds. This was after the Auditor General, Kimi Makwetu, highlighted a litany of potential fraudulent activity in the use of the relief funds in terms of procurement processes and the disbursements of temporary employment relief funds by the URF. The AG's report revealed shocking details of illegal payments, you know, to recipients of state grants. I think there were students also receiving the fund from the national, you know, who were receiving funds from the National Student Financial Aid Scheme and were receiving these payments from the URF. Public servants, URF employees, inmates, and even deceased persons and minors who don't qualify for the fund. So people took advantage of the fund that was meant to help those who lost jobs or had their salaries cut off. And it really looks like some within the URF facilitated this illegal activity. I want us to get an update now on where the investigations are and how the distribution of the funds is going. There were some administrative and security issues in the beginning, but people have still contacted me. You know, they have sent us messages on our WhatsApp and SMS line, and I've also received some emails. You know, some people have still not been paid. Some have gone to claim and found that their companies have already claimed the money, but it hasn't reached them. So if you have issues as well with the URF relief funds, share your experience with us. 011-883-0702. The lines remain open. You can also send me a voice note on 072-702-1702. The SMS line is 31702. I had a chat with the acting URF commissioner, Masha Bronkhorst, about all these issues a little earlier. Masha, thank you so much for your time. Maybe let's start with how the distribution of the funds is going so far. You had extended the relief fund to this month. Are there discussions to extend it further?
There are discussions currently at NEDLAC, but you will appreciate that it's a lengthy process to decide. We have to look at the actuarial value of the fund, whether there will be funds available post-COVID, et cetera, et cetera. So we are in discussions currently, but I can't give you a date when an announcement will be made.
But are you able to tell us maybe where government is heading to when you look at those discussions? Because government has previously raised an issue of affordability, but unions have argued that there is, for instance, 100 billion rand available. It's the workers' money, and it must be used to help workers to avoid companies closing down and workers being retrenched.
Yeah, I agree with that. But one must bear in mind that the 100 billion has been utilized by the COVID-TERS, not the whole amount, but some of it has been utilized by the COVID-TERS payments. We've paid close to 50 billion rands already in terms of COVID-TERS. So it's like any bank account. If you draw money or you take money out, you either have to replenish it or you know your final amount is going to decrease. And then that's what's happening with UIF as well. Mm. If we keep on drawing money to pay COVID-TERS and we don't get the income that we want or need, then clearly it's going to go the same direction.
Mm-hmm. How far are you with making those payments? Some people have been complaining that they have applied but still haven't received the money. How are you doing on that front in just making sure that you respond to the applications successfully and distribute those funds to those who qualify for them, of course?
Yeah, all competent claims are being paid. The challenges are around banking verifications, which we are a third party, you'll appreciate. So what happens is that a company would open a name, say in the name of Marsha Bronkhorst, but they go and open the bank account in the name of Marsha S. Bronkhorst, and then the verification fails. And many of the challenges we have in terms of paying people is because bank account verifications fail. Then it becomes a lengthy process. We have to see if we can manually verify the bank account, and if not, then we have to go back to the drawing board in terms of informing the employer that they must then take the matter up with the bank and resolve the issue. We can't do that on behalf of a client.
I want us to talk about the suspension now of the UIF commissioner, the CFO, the COO, and the head of supply chain management. That was early last month. Is the investigation into their possible conduct anywhere closer to being finalized?
You'll appreciate that it's a comprehensive investigation, quite a lot of things which have to be investigated. So I'm aware that the SIU has requested source documents. I'm aware that they've requested access to records, other records. I'm aware that they're busy with the interviews with everyone who was involved. So I think it would be unfair of me to commit them on a time frame and say we'll get a report by the end of this month. They are busy with the process, and they are actively busy with the process.
So you don't have any idea how that process will be finalized and when it will be finalized? Because I'm just thinking about the impact on the work of the commission, because the people that have been suspended, they're holding quite critical positions. It's almost like the engine of the UIF, so to speak. Their positions are critical to the healthy operations at the institution, especially now when the UIF is administering these test benefits.
I think one must bear in mind that no department is without competent people in other areas. For example, all the people who are acting in those positions are people who are well-versed in UIF operations, people who have been working either in our provinces, and just to backtrack a moment, UIF is decentralized, the processing thereof, the ordinary benefits to provincial offices and provinces. So there's a depth of knowledge and experience in provincial offices that we could tap on to temporarily replace the people that have been suspended.
And you've done that now. Obviously, people are acting in those positions. I'm just wondering, are they helpful to the institution and in distributing these funds? Were you able to find people that can maybe meet and have the skills that are needed in the positions that are now vacant because of these suspensions?
Oh, yes, indeed. We managed to find very knowledgeable people. As I said earlier, the fact that someone works in the head office does not mean he or she is the only knowledgeable person. So we've drawn from the depth we have in provinces to assist in terms of processing and managing the operations of the UIF.
When the Auditor General released his preliminary report and revealed the illegal activities that had been taking place at the UIF, I remember the Labour Minister calling for the UIF to strengthen its financial controls. Have you managed to do that?
Yeah, indeed we have. The biggest issue at that time in the findings of the Auditor General was the fact that payments went to people who might not necessarily have qualified for that if the controls were tighter. So we have improved all those controls with the assistance of our sister departments, Department of Home Affairs, Department of Correctional Services, the Department of Public Service and Administration, as well as NSFAS and FASA. So we've managed to tighten those controls. We've also tightened the bank verification controls. That's why you will hear that people say, but we got paid in May, but now all of a sudden we're not getting paid. It's the same bank account. It's because we tightened the verification processes and they get kicked out now in terms of not being verified.
And what were the gaps? Where were the weaknesses when you looked at those internal controls and you were tightening them? What did you identify and highlight as the risks and gaps within the institution?
Yeah, I think those two were the biggest gaps. The first one was that the UIF has got a database of 5 million IDs, and this was not updated live with the Department of Home Affairs. So one might find that there were claims put in for people who had passed on before the COVID period by employers, but we did not verify it with the Department of Home Affairs, so those payments went through. Also, the payments to bank accounts, the verification of bank accounts was another contract we were lacking on, so that was also tightened.
So can you confidently say now that those financial controls are working and it won't be easy, as it appears it was, to now loot the funds?
I am confident that we have put all the controls we could put in place, that we have put them in place.
How many cases?
We have seen.
Go ahead.
Yeah, we've seen with the first payment run already on the 21st of September, after we put the controls in place, the numbers of identity numbers that were kicked out for people who were deceased, people who are in prison, people who are not qualifying and so on, where already then the controls kicked out these identity numbers.
How many cases are you investigating now, and how many are before the SIU? Because my understanding is the SIU was doing its own investigation, but the Labour Minister had requested National Treasury to avail technical resources to the EFF to implement not only the Auditor General's recommendations, but also to maybe do a further probe of some of the transactions.
There are two processes running. The SIU is looking at the internal controls and involvement of officials and so on. And then our own risk unit is dealing with the SIU in terms of employers that possibly defrauded the fund. So already 13 employers have appeared in court for fraud allegations, and that process is unfolding as we finalize the cases. The bulk of these are employers who claimed for employees but didn't pay the money over to the workers. Then National Treasury is assisting us in terms of updating and helping us to see if we can make improvements in our systems to make it more user-friendly for our clients to use when they apply for the COVID test benefits and post-COVID. We're also starting to look at the post-COVID period.
Mm-hmm. Are there still problems with the application process?
Look, there will always be challenges because it's a human-driven process. So people capture things wrong. They capture wrong identity numbers. They capture wrong banking details. So there will always be challenges. But I can't say that it's a massive problem. But there will always be challenges.
Because I remember that as part of the challenge, people were not submitting all the required information, and that then caused the delay, because then you have to verify and you have to get the people to submit the supplementary documents. And I'm just wondering if that started, that process started, getting much easier, and you started seeing people, because there was more awareness, I suppose, also about, how the application process must be carried out. And I'm just wondering if there was an improvement since the TES benefit started a few months ago.
As I said, there seems to be an improvement, but we've also updated the system, and we have to go live this week with a new process, where a live feedback process. So as you capture along, it'll immediately give you where's your error and explain to you what to do to correct the error, so that we make it even more user-friendly. It's one of the upgrades that National Treasury's GTAX team is assisting us with.
Mm. I've got a tweet here that I want to read that I've received from Lesiba, who says, "Hey Clement, my friend was employed as a security officer from 2014 and was unfortunately retrenched in May. So when he went to claim his UIF, he was told that his company has claimed on his behalf, but they have only done so after he was retrenched. And he's even attached the documentation there. This is the friend's case. What do you advise in this instance? What do they need to do?"
Yeah, it's difficult to respond to a specific inquiry like this. Some employers have given people advances against their salaries and then used it as a refund to balance their books or reconcile their books. Some employers, so there are many permutations that it's difficult to, but if he's not comfortable, I would suggest he either goes to the office, Department of Labor office closest to where he stays, so that they can check and lodge a complaint against the employer if he's of the view that he's been underpaid. But having said that, we also have had instances where people were appearing on the TERS system, but then also were retrenched from the employers, and then the system blocks them and say there's a TERS claim for you, we can't process your UIF claim. We've also corrected that systematic problem or that issue, so people should not have any challenges around that going forward.
So if people have issues, then the first point of contact is their closest Department of Labor, so they need to approach that and raise issues there that they have. Masha, thank you so much for coming through and helping us understand how far you are as the URF in distributing those TERS benefits. Masha Bronkhorst is the Acting Commissioner at the UIF.
So there are still problems with the disbursements of the UIF TERS funds. The messages that I'm receiving on the SMS line and also on the WhatsApp line, a lot of people still have problems with the application and getting their funds. And SMS here says, Clement, I'm struggling. I haven't been receiving even my June payment. And then somebody else says, hi, Clement, I was only paid for the duration of 2 months since TERS inception. I want to know what causes the delay and when is the next payment. This is an SMS from Matume. Matume, the acting commissioner says that you have to approach your nearest, the nearest Department of Labor offices. But some people don't have, you know, it's far. You know, they will have to take a taxi or a bus to go to the nearest Department of Labor offices. Some people are living with disability, and I've got one of those SMSs here, but they're unable to get there. So that also becomes a problem. And apparently their emails are so automated that, you know, you don't get a lot of help if you try get them through emails. Let me go to your calls on 011-883-0702. Keenan, you're calling us from Bloemfontein. Hi.
Hi, Clement. How's it?
I'm good. How are you?
No, good. You know what, Clement? I have a big problem with the UIF, right, and how they administer this test. From the start, I wondered, why didn't they use TARS information systems? Because, you know what, my tax return I completed the next day, I got paid immediately. Mm. You know what? This happens. I mean, every company is supposed to do your SARS, your PAYE declarations as well as your UIF declarations on a monthly basis, right?
Mm.
And that's what every company does. So my thing is, why did any company even have to apply for the TERS benefit anyway? In fact, the company should have just said, you know what, we fall under the level 5 restrictions, we fall under the level 4 restrictions, these are our employees. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The UIF should have that on a database. And what I'm saying is, now she's saying, no, go to your UIF center or whatever. That's nonsense. If you go to your UIF center, I implore anyone to go there. Go there and see what are you going to get from that. What are you? You're going to stand in a line. You're going to be in contact with many people. There's not going to be a lot of social distancing, or there will be that much social distancing, meaning the place will be closed. That's all that happens. You phone the contact centers. They don't answer you. You phone the number, says the number is invalid. I mean, you know what? They come on the media and then they say, oh, this beautiful picture of how they paid $50 billion, and you must just understand that we have been doing our best. No, you haven't.
Yeah, Keenan, I know. And it's been complicated, really. It really has been complicated. And that's why I was even wondering what the impact on the work of the URF is on even the engine of the URF through the management was suspended. Butana, you're in Rosebank. Good morning.
Clement, good morning. This thing is not complicated. The government make it complicated. The people that are working there in government are the ones that make it complicated.
Mm.
Why can't people finish off their application online, everything?
Mm.
Why can't they do that? Let me give you an example. A person completes this thing online, and then they will request him to go to the nearest branch. Example here in CBD, Dikok there.
Mm.
A person will go there and queue for the forms, okay? And they cut in a line. They only help only 200 people. You get in, you get that form, whatever form, maybe go and get your confirmation of your bank details. You're going to come tomorrow, and you have to go there at 5 o'clock. What is that? That's nonsense, man.
Mm. Butana, I hear your frustration and I totally understand. And there are so many people on the SMS line on WhatsApp that also share your frustration. I'm hoping that the acting commissioner and some of the officials at the URF are listening to some of the issues that you are raising, because my goodness, you'd think they are getting a handle on the situation, especially after they intensified and strengthened their internal controls, but also tried to make it smoother, the system much smoother for people to apply. And we will bring her back on the show to answer some of your questions. And I mean, obviously, she won't be able to deal with each case, but I think she'll get an idea of what the common thread, the common concern is. Thank you for calling us with your experiences.